The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome back. It's about 25 minutes after 8. We get into another interview at this point in time. We started the discussion some time ago. And in our Money Talks segment, we are going to be focusing once again on this thing called a cashless society. Now, we started the discussions explaining a bit of what it means, and this is part two of that discussion. Let's welcome our guests this morning. We have in studio with us CEO of TTIFC and FinTech TT. That's John Outridge. Good morning to you. Okay, I'm not hearing you on the microphone. I don't know what's going on here now. So I'll try to see how best I could fix that. And we do have joining us via Zoom, CEO of First Atlantic Commerce. That's Christopher Burns. Good morning to you. Hi, good morning. And we have with us as well Senior Business Development Leader at Visa. That's Jorge Salum. Good morning to you as well.
Exactly. Now, I mean, if it's radio, we can do it.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, as I said to you, we've been having some challenges this morning. Let's try this once again. That's a welcome in studio here this morning with us, Mr. John Aldridge. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Nice. This is working. And joining us via Zoom, we have a CEO of First Atlantic Commerce, that's Christopher Burns. Good morning to you.
Hi, good morning.
Nice to have you with us here this morning. And we also have joining us as well, Senior Business Development Leader of Visa, that's Jorge Salum. Good morning to you as well.
Good morning.
Okay, gentlemen, it's nice to have you with us here as we do a part two to a discussion that we started last week about educating our population on what it means to have a cashless society. Now, I know that we are late out the gate because there are other societies, other parts of the world where a cashless society is already how they do business. And we here at home still have a lot of issues that we need to understand, let me put it that way, before we get into the nitty-gritty. We also have some challenges, some things that we need to overcome when it comes to getting it up and running. Let's start off with the CEO of FinTech TT, John Outridge, telling us about where are we in this entire race to become a cashless society, if I can say it's a race?
Yeah, and thanks for that, and pleasure to be part of this esteemed panel. I'm no stranger to both Chris and George, and they have spent some time working in this region. So just very quickly, so the TTIFC is a division under the Ministry of Finance, and our mandate is really to focus on three key things, which brings us to the cashless society. One, increasing the levels of financial inclusion within Trinidad and Tobago, and that really is how do you get people to move away from using cash and start using more electronic transactions. Two, working with the government and the state agencies in terms of digitizing their own payments so that citizens can now do business with the government without cash, because that is also a big driver. And then three, one of the main catalysts we have seen even globally is the need to have what I would call a thriving fintech sector to work with the financial institutions and to work with different entities to provide those services. Because we all know it's very challenging trying to get online payments and all of the different nitty-gritties that you have to deal with. So that particular sector is very, very vital and key in terms of driving this.
Let's speak to the CEO of First Atlantic Commerce, Christopher Burns. A cashless society, what are some of the benefits?
Hi, yeah, good morning. So for me, there's huge benefits. And, you know, as an individual, you know, I try, you know, and be as cashless as possible, because, you know, it just, there's so many other ways that you can actually pay for things and move forward. But, you know, there's lots of disadvantages to just only accepting cash. So let's take Bermuda, for example, today. So we are under hurricane watch today. Hurricane Franklin's just sitting out to our west right now. And, you know, thankfully it's gonna pass by without any real incident. But and any of the businesses that are not enabled to accept other methods of payment other than cash are losing revenue today. So anybody that is, you know, has an e-commerce presence or, you know, has enabled payment buttons or methods to accept card payments, you know, they're still able to generate revenue today. But anybody that's closed and accepts cash is losing out. And, you know, businesses that only accept cash also can only operate to, you know, when they're actually physically open. So, you know, if they're a 9-to-5 type business or, you know, not open at weekends, you know, again, it just presents this revenue loss opportunity for the businesses to out there. So, you know, there are so many different steps and so many solutions available to us, you know, as a region now. We just need to seek them out and move forward with them to move away from that cash base to a cashless society.
Now let's bring Mr. Salum into our discussion. Senior Business Development Leader, Visa. Engaging in cashless transactions is not something new. In fact, we have many mechanisms that people already engage in that they don't really consider it being part of a cashless drive or way to do business. Tell us, Visa is, of course, involved in cashless transactions, and they've been it's their business. What do you think are some of the challenges that societies face when being encouraged to go cashless?
So, good morning, and thank you for the question. So before jumping into that, I'd like just to mention, everyone knows, a lot of people know Visa. It's a global brand. But many people don't understand what Visa really does, right? We don't issue loans. We don't directly install terminals. We're a network, and world leader in digital payments. And what we try to do is remove barriers and connect more people to the global economy. And we work through financial institutions, local institutions that people trust. We work directly with fintech, with gateway providers like First Atlantic Commerce, to enable connectivity and the movement of money, right? So when you think of the challenges that we face in trying to build this and bringing this benefits to all segments of society, businesses have a unique set of needs, people have a unique set of circumstances, and our challenge is creating a trusted network that allows them to live their lives or to operate their businesses. And this implies coordinating a lot of different segments of society, a lot of different players into the spaces, and it implies educating the end users, right? So in terms of the challenges we face, it's the coordination of all the moving parts to achieve this. It's installing the infrastructure to enable that secure network and enable a positive user experience. And then third, ensuring that we educate the consumers and merchants that are the end users of the network.
One of the things I know that is an issue here at home, and probably Mr. Aldridge, you can deal with this one, is trust. People trusting these new systems, this new mode of doing business. We have a society where you have some people who don't even want to deal with banks. And we saw that clearly when we had the whole changeover of the $100 bill. A large sector of the country is unbanked, for want of a different term. And they don't trust financial institutions with traditional banking methods, much less to have an entire society that doesn't deal with the cash that they've become so accustomed to using. How do we overcome that?
So it's interesting you ask that question, because we have just concluded, because to your point, anecdotally, we kind of understand the concerns of society, right? But we really didn't have firm data, as you mentioned, unbanked. We just completed a national survey across Trinidad and Tobago, and these were household surveys where we interviewed, you know, 2,000 persons across the length and breadth. And the three key things we are trying to understand when looking at financial inclusion is it fits into three buckets: access to these services, the usage, and the quality. And it was very interesting getting the data, because one of the things we realized was access wasn't really a challenge, right? Because, you know, as I always like to say, trying to big up more ATMs than schools, right? I have over 450 ATMs, albeit not as well placed in, particularly in the rural areas, right? We have number of bank branches available. You can't pass anywhere too far without seeing a bank branch, right? And then we also have credit, a large number of credit unions. So we do have a large number of financial institutions. Interestingly enough, though, what we saw was the usage, and you would have seen this come out earlier in August from the Central Bank Stability Report, where they reported $37.7 billion were withdrawn from ATMs. So what that shows was people were getting their money into their bank accounts, right? But then withdrawing all and preferring to spend cash. Whether that is, and again, some of the things that we got from some of the data in terms of the stakeholder groups and so forth were, to your point, trust, transparency was a key issue. Because again, and then also a big part was really financial awareness and education. Because one of the things that you mentioned, particularly coming after the monetization exercise, you would have realized all the banks in Trinidad-Tobago would have converted what you traditionally would have known as your Lynx card with the Mark Stripe into these chip and pin debit cards. And then sort of happening in parallel with that is, at the same time, you had the financial sector changing out the point-of-sale terminals, so not everything now is tap and pay. I'm sure when you go anywhere, you're getting so accustomed to tap because it's a lot quicker. And when you look at it, tapping to make a payment is a lot quicker than cash. Huh? You get out of the way and you move forward, right? So you had these two big changes taking place in the marketplace. But one thing we realized was that the citizens really didn't understand, one, why this change was taking place. And it's really for their benefit, for security, how to use these services. Because also now you have these, and George could speak to this, you know, we have basically a million of those cards issued locally, those Visa debits that was replaced by Lynx. Those cards are now enabled to make payments or use what I would call in domestic commerce. So for all these local online stores, you can use your debit card. But again, people are not accustomed using it in that particular way. And some of the key things we saw was, you know, when it comes to quality, right? And this is where fintech becomes interesting, right? Because even being able to use those cards, because, you know, we see it when you go to certain merchants and you see somebody trying to pay and the cashier tell them to tap. And they don't know, they're not sure, because when you tap, it happens so seamlessly and it approves it, even if the money went, you know. So a large part of it is really what I would call awareness and education. But to your point, I think trust is a key barrier from what we would have seen.
Mm. And we have Mr. Burns and Mr. Saloom with us. How have your organizations been able to deal with that trust issue? Because it's across the board. And we have it so bad in this country that there are people who, when you tell them, well, listen, you can pay with your card, they say, all right, listen, no, I'll go and get the cash and come back. And I've actually seen it happen. There's another development, but let's deal with this one first. That trust issue, have you confronted it, and what are some of the things that were done to get over that?
So John's absolutely right, and you're right in terms of trust. So we need to go back and understand, you know, where that mistrust came from originally. And is it around payments, or is it around sort of general banking and access to financial products in the first place? So we need to certainly go back from that. And, you know, we have certainly faced that. You know, FAC has been providing payment solutions for the region for 24 years. We've seen the good and the bad over that time, and spent a lot of time certainly around education and the benefits of that. But we're strong believers of enablement rather than full replacement. Making it easy to provide trusted solutions within there, but also because of the time that, you know, companies like, you know, ourselves and Visa and the other card brands have been in the region, you know, eventually that trust is built over, you know, through the experience that people have with the company and the solutions that you offer. The network that we've been building out, you know, over the last, you know, has taken 10 plus years you know, to really become embedded and trusted within the system. So it doesn't happen overnight, but people will trust you if you have the track record of providing the quality of service, the security of service within there. But I hear what you're saying about cash. We have a client that that told us a story that somebody would use a card to go to an ATM to get cash out, then walk across the road to pay, in store for the services that they had but they could have used that card product in there. But the downside to that is somebody figured out that behavior and then was robbing people between the ATM and the store. Despite all the disadvantages of it, there's an ingrained habit, within our region, to keep enforcing that behavior. So, it's upon all of us as well to help move everybody into a direction that will provide security, safety, and opportunities for all of us.
Mr. Saluma, would you like to add to this discussion about encouraging people or educating them about the safer element of cashless as opposed to cash?
Yeah, I think it's a multi-pronged effort, and I think Chris and John both summarized it well. But ultimately, there are different elements that we focus on. The first is ensuring that we have a secure ecosystem that's delivering this service, a secure way to accept payments and a secure way to pay, right? Ultimately, when you're working with people, when you're touching people's monies, people's funds, it's a very sensitive issue, and it's natural for them to take an extra look and ensure that security is in place, right? So it's having the right infrastructure, and we know that criminals are becoming more and more sophisticated every day. So it's not about building the network and then just sitting there and letting it operate. We continuously invest in the latest technology to ensure that that transactions are going to be secure. But you also have to balance that with a positive user experience. Ultimately, you need to make people's lives better. You need to allow them to operate their businesses. So you need to find that proper balance between security and user experience. So we invest a lot of time and effort, either directly or through our partners, in ensuring that consumers have a seamless way to pay and merchants have a great way to accept payments, so that the first time they take the leap and that they use the ecosystem or the network, it's a positive experience and it becomes a reinforcing behavior, right? John alluded to some of the big leaps that we've made in Trinidad, which are already contributing to that cash conversion. Some of them include the migration of the Lynx debit card to an EMV contactless Visa Lynx debit card, the migration of Magstripe and basic chip terminals to a contactless EMV terminal that allows tap and pay. These are big leaps forward, and they provide the infrastructure necessary to continue growing and attracting more people and businesses into the ecosystem. The third element, or the third area that we focus on, is ensuring that we continue investing in the brand, right? The only way people, if you're traveling halfway around the world and you present a piece of plastic to a stranger and in exchange, they are gonna deliver a good or service. The only thing they can rely on is really the brand that's on that credential, on that card. So we continuously invest in ensuring that Visa is a trusted brand, and then also in partnering with credible entities like local financial institutions and gateway providers that people trust, that businesses trust, so that they take that leap of faith and try the ecosystem for the first time and then feel comfortable continuously using it. And the last element, of course, is education and incentives, right? So one is educating and making people aware, right? But then secondly, changing human behaviors is always a challenge, right? So you look for ways to incentivize them through promotions, through partnerships. So one of our partnerships that we know people love is the Cricket Premier League, right? This is a trusted brand. People get excited about going to their cricket matches. And when you link the use of a Visa card to a C or getting free delivery on their groceries or on their restaurant orders, it tends to drive that behavior. So we try to focus a lot on education and incentivizing consumers to continuously use electronic and digital payments.
Yeah. There's coming close to the end of our interview. Unfortunately, we did not have the amount of time that I wanted us to have. And we will definitely need to have another interview because this is important. And I believe that educating the population will go a long way in them understanding why things are changing, why some of these new measures are being put in place, and why they should utilize and trust them. If people don't understand things, you always get that pushback, that reluctance to engage. There's a development. I don't know how widespread it is, and you can probably tell me. I've seen, actually, where businesses have told customers, pay me in cash as opposed to pay me using these cashless devices. How widespread is that problem here at home, and how does that nullify some of the efforts to push in that direction?
So I'll probably jump in here. And again, coming back to that data from we have a wee survey, one of the things that we saw was 20% of the people that we survey, which, you know, again, represents 20% of the population, we put them in a bucket called basically where they decided to voluntarily financially exclude themselves. So to your point, we prefer to transact in cash. We will probably never want to use our bank product or service. And two key things comes out of that, right? It doesn't happen here. It happens everywhere else, right? So, and it's either one, you know, obviously not wanting to create that paper trail, i.e. Tax avoidance. And the other one is obviously in terms of the fees, right? Because I was recently in New York, in Manhattan, in a restaurant, and the waiter came and said, if you pay cash, I'll give you 10% off your bill. Instant cash back. So for me, it's a natural what's in it for me, right? I would prefer to pay cash if you give them a... But when you think about what's promoting that behavior, right? Because obviously you're not trying to have too many transactions on the books, right? So you do see that from a merchant's perspective, particularly in that. And that in itself is a challenge, and that has to have some different strategies to deal with it. But also in relation to the fees, which is something that we are trying to work on, you know, the cost of doing these transactions. And interestingly enough, when you use the Lynx machine, a lot of people don't even think about it, but you pay a transaction fee to withdraw cash, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not your bank, it's $7. If it's your bank, you know, it's closer to $4. So there are fees as it relates to anything. And this is one of the big ticket items the TTIFC will be exploring coming in this fiscal in terms of, you know, when we will have seen right close to home in Brazil. Brazil started a journey 2 years ago. Brazil has a population of 217 million. For the past 2 years, they have migrated $135 million where you can't go Rio de Janeiro and buy a caipirinha with cash. They'll tell you, no, you have to pay something called Brazil Pix. They're not accepting cash. These are the merchants, you know? So it's really what's in it for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these are the things we're trying to... The last point I want to close on is one of the things we want to do is to help people understand everybody at some point in time in their life needs to get some financial support from an institution, whether it's to get a loan, to go on a vacation, or to send their kids to school, or to buy a house, or to buy a car. But if you don't have any transaction history, you have no footprint, it's very difficult for you to secure these microfinancing lending services. And these are the some of the, what I would call the salient points you want to drive out for the man on the street. Because for them, me switching out my usage for cash for something else, what's in it for me? What's the benefit for me outside of, you know, security and safety? I think largely the inclusion part is if I can get access to a PD loan when I'm falling short, and by using these cashless transactions, I'm creating that profile to help me. I think that will signal a long way, because one of the things we did see in the survey is that one of the questions we asked is if somebody was to be exposed to, you know, an unforeseen life event, would they have enough cash to support themselves? And 80% of them said no. So we do see that access to finance is also a challenge which ties into the cashless problem, because I can't get a loan if I have the bank have no history on me and my repayment patterns, etc., etc.
That survey is a really interesting one.
Yeah, something that we'll be sharing with the population in different aspects. So we just concluded, but it has a lot of insight into some of these barriers, I would say.
Yeah, and it tells us a lot about where we are as a nation as well. Because that one point that you raised, about 80% of people admitting to themselves that should an unforeseen circumstance happen, they don't have the money to deal with it, says that your population is financially unstable when it comes to dealing with some of these things that happen to all of us. So I'd definitely like to hear more about that when it does come up. Gentlemen, this, we're going to have to leave our interview here this morning, but we are going to have further discussions, that's given, because we've only just scratched the surface of what is taking place worldwide and why we here at home need to get on train much faster than we've been doing, even though we've had some significant developments. I want to thank all three of you for being with us here this morning and sharing your insight into this very, very interesting topic, a cashless society. Once again, thank you, all three, for being here this morning.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thanks for including us.
That's where we drop the curtains, ladies and gentlemen. A couple messages, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.